I'm bullish on hockey. I'm bullish on where the sport's going. I think that if you look at Utah and you look as a winter sports market, almost every Olympic sport, winter Olympic sport trains there year round. There's a long history of hockey. And then just the rise of hockey. Everyone knows going to a live hockey game, there's nothing really like it. We're excited about that. We've also, you know, we've had the Frozen Fury since we've taken over in the arena in Utah, which has done incredibly well.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, DKSL Sport. It became official yesterday. The press conference is going on today. One in Phoenix that just wrapped up. Another one here in Salt Lake City that will kick off at 5 o'clock. You'll hear it right here on The Zone. And the guy who kicked things off and the firestorm just a couple weeks ago, Frank Saravalli, hockey insider and president of hockey content for the Daily Faceoff, kind enough to join us once again. And Frank, you were the most popular Twitter account a couple weeks ago here in Salt Lake City when the news broke that this was going to be a possibility. Obviously, things went quickly. Now it's official. But how long do you think this was essentially a done deal that hockey was coming to Salt Lake City?
I'd say probably right around the time that I had started tweeting it. I had been talking about some of the machinations that were in place or that the league was working on and exploring. But just for timeline and some clarity, the league actually went to former Coyotes owner Alex Mariello on March 6th and met with him in person. And he was initially, I don't think combative is the right word, but he definitely wasn't on board with the plan and didn't have any designs on selling the team, let alone relocating. So that part took some convincing, and it also took some maneuvering in terms of the dollars to entice him to do it. And then once that happened, it kind of fell into place kind of quickly to find something that they would all be comfortable with, including language. And by the time I had tweeted it last week, it was, I believe, already agreed upon at that time.
So, Frank, do we have any samples of a team that is making a move and will be back on the ice in a different venue in a matter of 5 months with a renaming and an organizational change? And if so, how successful was it? And I'm talking about really a 5, maybe 6 month period.
So there is some recent history. The Atlanta Thrashers moved to Winnipeg and became the Winnipeg Jets in 2011. I was covering the league at that point, and that announcement was made on May 31st, 2011, and they ended up playing in Winnipeg that October. So that gives you some indication. The Utah team, whatever they're going to be called, they've got an extra 6 weeks or so on that, and that'll prove beneficial. And was it successful? Yeah, I mean, I can remember being at the draft in 2011, and a lot of people were thinking at that point that the team was gonna, the draft, by the way, is in late June. I remember the Jets making their pick and them holding up a sort of blank jersey that had the NHL crest on it. That's sort of how the process worked, and they not only hit the ice to massive fanfare in Winnipeg, but have been really one of the model franchises in terms of how they're operated since then. They're in the smallest market in the NHL. They've got the smallest building with like 12,000, 13,000 permanent seats, and they've been a contending team that's had chances to win and have been a playoff team as many more years than not. And so it's a resounding success story. It happened on a shorter timeline than this one, and there's no reason why this all can't come together smoothly.
So, again,
I should add this in there. Utah and Ryan Smith and Smith Entertainment Group are actually leaning on the people in Winnipeg right now for some guidance. They're getting pointers, they're getting information, they're getting help on the process and how it all works, and They're working together, actually.
We've heard so much about the amount of assets that this franchise has in terms of draft picks, salary cap space, things along those lines. So kind of walk us through. And again, this is like the whole Michael Scott line from The Office. Talk to us like we're 5 years old, because you're talking to football guys who have also been covering the NBA. So we're cannonballing into the NHL water. So you might hear some questions like, these dudes are morons. We're learning, and we're representing a fan base that's going to learn and totally embrace this thing. But NBA has the draft and then the free agency afterwards. Does that line up with the NHL as well? Is it draft first and then free agency? Or what's the timeline of these two events that are obviously going to be for the organization?
Yeah, exactly the same. How they do things are a little bit differently. Like, the NBA has a legal tampering period. The NHL does not. They used to and got rid of it. In this case, this year, the draft is just 2 days before free agency opens. So the draft is the 27th and 28th of June. It's in Vegas at the Sphere, which is pretty cool. So the draft will be there. And then 2 days later, on July 1, every year, it's easy to remember because it's Canada Day, July 1st. The same for us as 4th of July, and that's the opening of free agency. That's when the new league year begins, and that's when you can sign free agents. So that's easy to remember. And, yeah, similarly, like, the length of the season is the same. Both are 82 games. Many of them, NBA and NHL teams, share the same building, so that part is easy. And the seasonality of the leagues is pretty similar as well in terms of when training camp starts, when you begin to drop the puck on the regular season. All those things, they line up pretty nicely.
Frank, I'm interested in a common distribution, whatever network or whatever TV or streaming that most of these NHL teams are viewed on. Scotty and I have been talking about it. We think Channel 16 will probably continue to carry it. There's been a couple of reports here. They carried the Golden Knights games here in the area. So I'm curious, what is the typical distribution? Because I think that these Salt Lake, the Utah fans, are going to really want to see the product.
Makes sense. That's actually been one of the topics that has been sort of TBD, still to be figured out. So you hit it right on the head that technically Utah as a market, the entire state, belongs to the Vegas Golden Knights regional area. And as part of this relocation, the Golden Knights are going to have to give up Utah. And my guess would be probably even some other surrounding states or chunks of them. And in exchange, I believe what's been talked about, not set in stone, is that the Golden Knights will lose Utah, but they'll add Arizona to their portfolio. So these things are all work in progress. You know, it's really an interesting time, as you guys probably know, in regional sports media. Some of these networks are in bankruptcy. Some are, you know, changing the way they do business. And there's been a big approach or push for streaming. Arizona and Vegas have both kind of gone in different directions. Oddly enough, two teams kind of around Salt Lake that, you know, when you look at the Coyotes, their games were available free over the air, didn't need cable. Vegas also took a subscription approach. So there's lots of different ways you can do it, and the goal, I'm sure, will be to be as accessible as possible for people in Utah. And the other part is, you know, they're going to want everyone to be able to get their hands on this to learn and educate themselves and enjoy and be entertained. So that part will be all part of it as well.
Is there revenue sharing in local TV rights, or do you just keep what you earn?
You keep what you earn.
Interesting. So, you know, your New York Rangers on their TV deal would have obviously have a higher revenue stream than your Winnipeg Jets, essentially.
Yeah, except the New York Rangers own their own TV network. MSG is has the Rangers and Knicks. And so that's one thing that a lot of teams do in the NHL. The Washington Capitals own Monumental Sports Network. The Philadelphia Flyers own a chunk of NBC Sports and NBC Sports Philadelphia. There's tons of examples to point to that maybe, and I don't know what the regional situation is, and you guys could educate me, maybe the best interest of Ryan Smith is to start his own regional sports network with the two teams that he now owns, that he can put it in homes, you know, around the region.
Well, it might be the way to go, because he also owns the Major League Soccer team here in Utah as well, Frank. So we could see him packaging all of his sports entities together and trying to build something out. I don't know how much you know about Ryan Smith and what he did with Utah Jazz and its distribution, but he basically took a huge loss and put it on local network so you could have rabbit ears and get Jazz games. And he did it because I think that he wants to continue to build the bulk of Jazz fan base and get it in the homes of people that want it. So he took a big leap of faith. And the NBA, they rewarded him with a really nice award at the end of the season. And they've pointed at that as the reason to give him the award. He's innovative. He tries to give the fans the best he can, and I could see him doing something like that if it would work. I just don't know what goes into something like that.
And the one nice thing about working with the NHL is, more than a lot of other leagues, they've been really progressive on the digital front of making their game more accessible. You know, the NFL has super strict highlights rules, and you know, there's all sorts of different blackouts and different stuff in place and in different sports. The NHL is more or less like, hey, whether it's on, you know, YouTube or whatever it might be, digital streaming, they're trying to get their product in the hands or in, you know, in front of as many people as possible.
This isn't a particularly fair question to ask. I'm asking you to speculate a little bit here, Frank, but first off, your evaluation of the current front office of the Coyotes and the Smith Entertainment Group is inheriting, it seems like, considering the lack of resources that was available to him and that front office, that he did a remarkable job of building this team for the future. What's your evaluation of them? And if this team does have the resources that Ryan Smith claims that he will put into this team, how quickly can this team be a playoff squad?
Well, to answer the first part, I would say, looking at Bill Armstrong's overall body of work, considering the lack of resources that he's had and also the different pressure points, so it's not just lack of resources, it's you've been managing one of the teams that's been the laughingstock of the league. You've been managing a team that plays in a college arena, and there was lots of speculation at the draft last year after their referendum in Tempe, Arizona was shot down by voters that, hey, look, no one wants to be drafted by the Coyotes. They've got the number 6th and number 12 overall picks. And they ended up going with two Russian players at a time when not all that far after the war in Ukraine and simmering tensions between, you know, the geopolitical sphere. A lot of people had kind of shied away from Russians again because Russians haven't necessarily been easy to transfer over here to play in the U.S. and North America. So they have been forced to make decisions that I think in a perfect world, Bill Armstrong otherwise wouldn't make. Not to say that they don't like those two prospects. It's just that sometimes if you're backed into a corner, you've got to make the best of a bad situation. And so that's been part of it. I'd love to see him be given an opportunity to run with this in an environment that has energy, that people want to be there. And it just changes the total viewpoint of his body of work. I mean, look at the trade deadline. They had a couple interesting pieces on their roster. Matt Dumba on defense, Jason Zucker up front. At a time when, you know, in the NHL, there's such a premium placed on expiring contracts and pending free agents. And they had two pretty decent players that they ended up getting next to nothing for in return, because in the NHL, the popular thing is to retain salary. hey, we're going to keep half of this guy's money over the remaining part of the year so that you can fit him onto your team's cap. And in exchange, we'll give you a good draft pick. Well, the Coyotes were dealing with money limitations from their owner, and he said, hey, guess what? You're not retaining any money. You got to trade these guys as is with their current contracts, and you get nothing in return. And so that's not something that I'd expect Ryan Smith to be doing, but how do you then slam Bill Armstrong? Like that? He's playing with a short deck. So that part has been hard. And how quickly, to answer the next part, will this team or can this team be competitive? If they're super aggressive this summer and if they are making moves and trades and signing free agents, I think they have an outside shot. I'd say like a 30 to 40% chance to make the playoffs next year with the foundation that they've built. But I would say if they play their cards right and remain true to this build in a certain aspect, meaning help support some of it, but don't let that get in the way of what you're trying to do ultimately, which is build a sustainable winner, I'd say 2 years from now, meaning in 2026, you should have the Utah Hockey Club or whatever they end up being called skating in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Wow. Let's go.
So, Frank, we really kick off the NHL playoffs coming up tomorrow. And in an effort to help people understand how the NHL is built and how the postseason works, so as I understand it, it's an Eastern and Western Conference, just like the NBA. But There are two divisions in each conference, the Atlantic and Metropolitan in the East and the Central and Pacific in the West. The new Utah team would remain in the Central Division in the Western Conference. Now, how do they decide postseason matchups? Because as I understand it, they don't do a 1-8 like the NBA does. How does the NHL decide it?
So they used to do a 1-8, and when they realigned their divisions and conferences, what they worked out is the top – so there's four divisions of eight teams. The top three teams in each division are guaranteed to make it, so there's still 8 and 8 from each conference. So you've got the top three in the Metro and the top three in the Atlantic, and then they take the next two best teams – regardless of which division they're in, as the two wild card teams, that then it essentially ends up being, it's a bracket that they have. And so you end up the best team, overall team in the conference, gets the second wild card team. So technically it's still kind of an idea of 1-8. The top team in the conference gets the last team in. And then that team, even if they aren't part of that division, ends up in that bracket that then goes throughout the playoffs. So the league loves the idea of the bracket. They love sort of how March Madness and their bracketology takes over. And so they're definitely very much interested in keeping that part of it. And in the meantime, I think it's, for the most part, worked pretty well.
Yeah, so you like it then? As just a hockey fan, you think that's been successful?
A lot of times what you end up getting is the normal 1-8 of what it would be anyway. Occasionally you get a weak division, but for the most part it works out almost exactly the same. And sometimes you end up with some good rivalries. The big complaint from hockey fans would be that because it's a bracket, you could have the two best teams in the entire conference in the same division that end up playing each other in round two as opposed to round three. But my response to that would be, in order to be the best, you've got to beat the best anyway. And whether you lose in round two or round three, it doesn't really make much of a difference.
Is everything throughout the postseason a 7-game series? And if so, is it the 2-2? Tell me the format. Is it similar to the NBA or what is their home and away schedule?
So all four rounds are best of 7, and it's 2-2, 1-1-1.
Got it. Is there going to be any adjustments with Salt Lake coming in? You know, they're relatively close to Arizona. Are they going to adjust the divisions at all and conferences, or is it just status quo?
Status quo. Salt Lake, I believe, Utah is going to be in the Central Division. And one thing I want you to keep in mind, as you're getting your feet wet into hockey is really pay attention to these next 2 weeks, because hockey to me is the total opposite of basketball in that the best rounds of the Stanley Cup playoffs are usually rounds 1 and 2. And I think the play kind of drops off a little bit, and a lot of people obviously lose interest because you're losing markets as the playoffs go on. Whereas in the NBA, no one really pays attention too much to the first round unless it's your team. You're always kind of focusing on, hey, what does that NBA final matchup look like? And you kind of miss it. In hockey, there's upsets left and right. 8 routinely beats 1. That's a normal thing. It's totally unpredictable. And just the amount of action on the different channels and networks, like you've got 4 games going a night, it's as good as it gets. It's like for us, if you're a hockey person, this is your March Madness these next 2 weeks.
So that central division that you're talking about that they play in with Dallas, Winnipeg, Colorado, Nashville, St. Louis, Minnesota, and Chicago, is that perceived as one of the more dominant conferences in the NHL, divisions in the NHL, or is it typically one of the more competitive divisions in the NHL?
Right now, it's probably either the most competitive or second most. They're calling this central division side of the bracket for this year the group of death, because Dallas is the number one seed in the West. Colorado won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago in 2022. The Winnipeg Jets just topped Colorado for home ice advantage in the first round. And it's, oh, by the way, guess what? The treat for Dallas as the number one seed, they get the 8th seed, which is the second wild card, which happens to be the defending cup champs in Vegas. So you have an unbelievable season, and then you get to play the defending champs in round 1. So it's going to be tough sledding no matter what. And, for the most part, though, it's cyclical, right? Right now, the Central is definitely the better division in the West. You could make the argument, is Central better than Atlantic? It's probably a toss-up. For a long time, the Metropolitan was sort of considered the tops, but it goes back and forth.
Okay. Last dumb question, and I know that you've essentially written.
There are
hockey...
no dumb questions, and ask, like, honestly, ask away. Like, don't feel funny, because I want to help you guys.
You've essentially written Hockey for Dummies book over the last 10 minutes with us. We appreciate it. How is, in terms of scheduling going, you know, we hear, NBA, you play teams in the conference usually 4 times, 2 at home, 2 away, and then the Eastern Conference, 1 home and away. How is that broken up in the NHL in terms of your 82-game schedule?
It's pretty similar. You get every team in the East. Utah will get twice, once home, one away. You will get other teams in the Pacific, I think, 3 times. And you'll get – look, math is not my thing, but it's very similar. You'll also get, I think, 4 or 5 division games, depending on how it breaks down. So it's it's pretty similar to the NBA in that respect. You will get every team come through your building at least once a year.
All right, for all of our listeners out there, Golden Knights versus the Stars, that kicks off on Monday. That series kicks off on Monday. I'm circling that one, Frank. That's my go-to. I'm going to be watching it.
Don't sleep on Colorado-Winnipeg. That might be the most entertaining first-round series. And if you really want to see some physical hockey, check out the Battle of Florida. You've got Florida against Tampa Bay. That's going to be really good, too.
Frank, we weren't kidding when we said we owe you a big meal when you get here to Salt Lake City. Ans and I will treat you right, man. We appreciate all your help. Thanks for hanging out with us. And, again, hopefully this is the second of many more conversations to come with you throughout throughout this summer as we continue to get people ready for hockey here in Salt Lake City.
Can't wait, guys. Thanks a lot. Take care.
There you go. Frank Saravalli, hockey insider and president of Hockey Content, Daily Faceoff right here on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.